Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You are listening to Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards here in Washington, D.C. Great special guest with us this afternoon. As usual, someone that I've known for a while, and I really, Byron, I want to extend a great thanks for you taking time to join us and talk about really something that's part of a really exciting time in workforce development right now, the implementation for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act.
Ron, thank you. It's great to be here. Certainly talked with you and your organization, your membership over time, and just appreciate this opportunity in a kind of new role to be back and talking with you and your members.
Cool. Let me suggest to folks, if you're listening live and you have a question, you can dial 773-897-6309, and that'll connect you to Donna Riles, who is at the controls, as always. And Donna will chat with you and then get that question passed on to me and to Byron. Otherwise, you can put your question into the chat window, and again, Donna and or I will see that pop up and we'll ask. Let me go back and more formally introduce Byron Zeitema is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration. And as a member of ETA's Senior Executive Service, Byron provides leadership, as he always has, to the national, state, and local leaders to promote workforce solutions that meet the needs of employers, workers, and communities. His career in workforce and community development spans local, state, and federal levels of leadership. He also has experience in the private sector, where he worked with software and technology companies. In his current role, Byron is responsible for driving all technical assistance activities around the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So I'm going to shorten that, Byron, and call it the I&O. So welcome again. Hey, you and I have gotten to share. It's always fun to sit down with you and chat. Tell me a little bit more, I guess, tell our listeners a little bit more about what's your role now in the regulatory process, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that process is. But what's your role now that you're here in D.C.?
Sure. Well, everybody knows the Opportunity Act passed, and what you also know is that the Congress gave us, the Department of Labor, 6 months to push out the initial publication of what we call the Notice of Public Rulemaking, or the NPRM. Now, that six-month timeline has expired. We negotiated an agreement with the Office of Management and Budget in the White House to have a couple of additional weeks, really, to do this really important work. It was a really, really ambitious timeline to give us 6 months. Everybody agreed with that. But we are nearing that finish line, and in the not-too-distant future, we will actually push out the NPRM. And that will be, for all of you, the public, our partners out there, your first glance at some of the sort of more detailed regulatory language that we're using to describe the Opportunity Act itself.
So we talked about the NPRM, the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. So in the context of how the federal government makes rules, Byron, how does this sit? What is, you know, what can we expect, or like what happens next? So there's this proposed rulemaking. How is that different from like rulemaking?
Right. Yeah, the most people are more familiar with what is actually called an interim final rule. And the way that works, we would have done much of the similar work that we did, where we initially, you know, consulted with the USA system, we did the listening sessions and so forth, and then we began to write. An IFR, or an interim final rule, is actually the rule on the day it's published, but it is subject to comment, and then we review those comments, often incorporate some of those into some changes, modifications, or clarifications, and then we republish in a final rule. The distinction is, as we publish it, it is the rule. A notice of public rule is different. It is, at this point, our notice that we intend to have rules. It is not, does not have the effect of rule the day it publishes. So it's also more of a dialogue kind of document. So you'll see us talking about boards, for example, which we'll spend more time discussing today. You'll see us talking about some of the added guidance language that we suggest may be in the rule. It also asks us to just ask direct questions. What would be the impact if we did this? What's the outcome of doing that? Do you have a better idea?
I was just going to ask.
So it's a bit more conversational.
But it's more, instead of having, now you've done a number of town hall meetings, you've done a number of webinars talking about it. So the NPRM, if I hear you correctly, is your opportunity almost to ask more direct questions, to ask, you know, maybe you've heard two or three, and this is where you're clarifying what is the question or what do people need to know?
Yeah, that's right. It really does two things. It opens a dialogue in my mind. It will clearly, you will see us pointing in directions and offering language that says, we think we will go in this direction. We think we will describe this in this fashion. But then, yes, to your question, we'll actually, we may, for example, say, you know, we actually heard a couple of kind of competing things on this particular point. What about option A and what about option B? So it'll be that kind of a document, and it'll be a very good opportunity for us to, through a formalized process, when I say dialogue, I do want to clarify, once it is published, the only way to dialogue with us about the actual content of what is published is to use the formalized Federal Register process. At that point, you and I, Ron, wouldn't sit down and discuss in detail, you know, page 38 on boards. That your input, or your members' input, will actually come in through the Federal Register process.
And I'm assuming page 38 would be the last page.
That was sort of hypothetical, Ron, and no, there will be many more pages than that. There actually are there are several NPRMs. Not sure how much detail we need to do in that today, but you will see several. One is just the ETA portion of it. One is the joint, you know, Department of Education and the ETA one. One is just the education portions, because as this act works and brings us together as partners, it also has some specific amendments that are unique to each of us as federal programs, federal departments. And so for those areas, you have yet another standalone NPRM. And once it's out, it'll hopefully make a little more sense. You'll see how these things both, you know, intersect with each other and how they also are distinct for each of the federal partners.
That's a great point. We're, I know, because we... you know, I'm with you all quite often. I think that's a point, Byron, before I get back to kind of the technical process, I think that's a point that people really don't understand well, and that's the fact that the INO really, I don't want to say forced, but it really ramped up the interdepartmental conversations in Washington, correct? I mean, you guys are really... there's a lot of cross-departmental discussion going on.
Absolutely. I think, you know, for I'm relatively new, you know, as a full-time occupant of the national office, but, you know, certainly I've had a long history of conversations over time with our federal partners, both here and, you know, in the Chicago region and elsewhere, as have all the senior leaders in this building. But this last 6 months has been remarkable in that we have spent far more time together, really wrestling through common, you know, common issues, common understandings, common vision for how it is that we would come together and be in this joint business, which is this business of training people, creating jobs, and satisfying, you know, the needs of workers. And it really has been a true team effort where the team really just has one goal. We're in one game, it's the same game, and reach, you know, trying, you know, very much to understand and play our position in that whole process.
So when the NPRM comes out, it's almost like in the way back day when we were in college and grad school and you did study groups, it's you could almost take the NPRM and create a study group among the players at the local level, correct? Because you're all going to be looking at, I mean, even though it's in three sections, but you're still in that joint section, you still need an understanding of what role everybody is being expected to play, because there's a lot of players, there's a lot of moving parts in the
That's exactly right. And then to use your analogy, if that study group was tasked with producing just one joint paper, the whole dialogue discussion process in the room was very much the same, where, literally line by line, this paper, if you will, that we have done jointly, had the support of each of the members in the room to say, yes, we've got it right. We've wordsmithed it sufficiently. We understand the meaning of each of these words, and collectively, it's what we jointly mean. So, good analogy.
So, real quick, we're gonna mm-hmm. see an NPRM. The department has officially said sometime in spring.
Right.
And then there's going to be a period where people can comment back to those, to the questions or to the points that are raised.
Right.
Do you know how long that timeline is going to be, Byron? Or we're not sure yet.
I'd rather than state, because it's all sort of dependent on when this is published, but there will be a significant open period where comments will be taken. So, it'll supply, I think, ample time for people to not only, just like do a quick read and try to respond, but to read and, for your members to maybe collectively think together and work with you and others to do similar things and still have time to have a thoughtful, dialogue amongst themselves and come back with responses.
So I did one more quick question on this, and then I want to move on to some other things. So would we expect that after the NPRM, we're going to go right to the final regs, or we're going to go to interim regs?
Well, in terms of this, to put it in perspective, and I think that kind of carries us forward in our conversation, in January of 2016, we will by that time publish what will be the final regs. And, of course, at some subsequent point, there could be other amendments or something. But for this process, it concludes next year, January of 2016, with the publication of what will then be the final regs. In the meantime, and an example is the TEGL that we just put out in 1914, the Vision Teagle. There will be ongoing guidance like that, what we would call the sub-regulatory guidance. It's not this regulation rule that will come out in January, but we'll continue to, if you will, communicate with the system through a variety of other guidance products that we use, Teagles, TENs, notice letters, that say, here's our thinking, here's our direction on reporting, on implementing youth, on moving boards forward. You will see us now come out with some of those products, this spring, and I'm sure really, throughout much of the next year.
So what kind of, and I know the conversations are ongoing, what are the thoughts inside ETA right now around the technical assistance? What are you guys thinking? What are you planning that you can share with us? What are the opportunities for additional input?
Sure. Well, the part of the input starts with the fact that we do have an agreement with what we call the IGOs, the Intergovernmental Organizations. NOB is one of the premier examples of those. NGA, NASWA, Conference of Mayors, Council of State Legislatures, and so on. So, we, as you know, we have a cooperative agreement with you to help us infuse your members' views into us, so that we're going to get information from you about what kind of technical assistance is needed, how should it be delivered, webinars, localized regional meetings, potential for I'm sure more webinars, some of it in paper product perhaps, so online downloads. So we will be listening to you. You will be giving us content assistance. You'll be giving us some of your, what we're calling kind of the voices of experience, because we know that across this country, WIOA, in some respects, just caught up to where a lot of your members were. They'd been moving forward, they'd been creating opportunity, they'd been doing innovations, And so, you know, on one hand, someplace in the country, there's, you know, one of your members saying, I don't know how I'm going to do this new part of the act. And there's other members who have said, yeah, we've been doing that already. So we want to work with you to make sure that we're, you know, matching up that peer-to-peer learning wherever possible. We think it's, you know, certainly we the department will have a voice, your organizations will have a voice, but often facilitating peer-to-peer learning is a really good way to, you know, get the point across on a very down-to-earth and Main Street USA way.
Okay, let me step out half a second and remind folks that you are listening to Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards. I'm your host, Ron Painter, and my guest today is Byron Zeitema, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Labor's Employment and Training Administration. We're talking about the implementation for the WIOA legislation. Byron, let me ask you, you know, we've been talking about kind of the timeline for guidance, which you released, as you mentioned, the TIGO 1 TIGO last week. There's more coming as we move toward the spring. What's your sense of, you know, how prepared the system is? You all have been doing, and I do have to say, you've been doing an enormous amount of listening and outreach to organizations to talk about what really is a transformative piece of legislation. But what's your sense of how prepared the system is?
Yeah, I think this is kind of like, you know, change, organizational change in any significant, you know, corporate body, and in this case, thinking of all of us collectively, the Department of Labor, state agencies, your local members, et cetera, all kind of being in this corporate business of workforce development together. I think there are clear examples of local workforce boards and, you know, their executive leadership and their staff who really have moved off the line, have been doing significant work in youth development, in sector strategies, in, you know, driving apprenticeship into more occupations and really benefiting from the earning and learning, you know, opportunities you get there. So I think there are great examples of leadership and movement there. I think that there are others who, you know, maybe they've had, you know, turnover in leadership. Maybe they've had, you know, significant resource challenges. Maybe, you know, community leadership didn't quite come together. Maybe the economy just was crushing and it was hard to move forward. So I think there are also, you know, a reasonable number of organizations that do have quite a bit of work to do. I think for everyone, no matter where they are on that continuum, the primary word in this act that I continue to refer to is opportunity. I think there's a huge opportunity to move forward, no matter where any of your members find themselves today.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, again, I think it's, I appreciate your conversation regarding, like, the NPRM and what may follow, but this is not a time for people to be sitting around waiting for that.
Absolutely
right?
Not.
I mean, what are the kind
exactly.
of things that you're so I catch you in the hallway, you know, what are the kind of things that you are saying to people they need to be really, they ought to be thinking about and working on now? Not thinking, but working on.
Right. Yeah, continuing on this theme of opportunity, I mean, we absolutely think that, you know, enough is known for action now. That might be, you know, the slogan or the bumper sticker of the moment. And, you know, by that what I mean is, first of all, by now, all the practitioners, all the leaders that, you know, your members out there, they've read this act. They've had various discussions about it. They've, you know, pulled out certain sections and really delved into them because they are of the primary interest, depending on where they sit. So we know that a lot of background stuff has been done. We've had town hall meetings. We've talked about things. You've had, you know, membership discussions. You've put out papers. So that foundational knowledge is there. And we think what that foundational knowledge can lead to is a variety of sort of act now things. And you have four boards. Let me be specific about a few things. And, you know, at this point, I'm not saying this is this part of the conversation is not the departmental guidance. Our guidance comes out in writing. But, you know, based on what we know here in the department and us being professional colleagues together who have been in the business for a while, I would be saying, I'm sitting out there in the audience, I'm working with my local board and my local one-stop system. First of all, I would really, I would take a pause and I would really have us sit down and decide, are we really ready for change? So I think just the whole idea of change management and is our organizational structure, our individual members, we as the professionals in this business, whether it's the professional board member or the executive, are we ready for change? And that's not just a sort of feeling we have, but there's actually organizational things to do. There are metrics we can use, there are exercises we can use that help us ensure that we're ready to be engaged in change management. I would do that kind of first with board and the key staff, because board is so key in all this. So have we stopped and examined, and have we, you know, looked at implementing actual processes for change management to ensure that we've laid a foundation that is right now not about the technical aspects, but it's just about us. Organizationally, we're ready for change. I would do that. I would, as soon as I'd make sure kind of like the immediate family is ready, you know, the existing board partnership, I would expand it to the new partners so that you haven't gone too far down the road without all your new partners. You've just made sure you're ready to talk to your partners, but get them in early, get them in often, and talk about, again, the sort of the fundamentals of change management, acknowledging, you know what, this is a new partnership, perhaps for some who have not had all the now required partners in the game, and just saying, this is going to be new. Let's talk this through. Without the detail right now, this is how ready are we for change. Include, you know, your state partners. Primarily today, I think I'm talking to a local audience, but so much of what you do intersects with state-level partnerships and leadership. So bring those into your change management discussion. So first, I would really just do that, which doesn't even have anything to do with the details of the act.
Let me ask you, Byron, because we've chatted about this subject of workforce boards, their relationship to the community. You and I have talked about this before, and I know your background, you know, you started out at the local level, you started out around community development. It seems to me the work of the boards can't be complete without engaging, whether that's community-based, faith-based organizations, other organizations in the community who are doing various pieces of workforce development. From your experience, and you know, how does a board who's looking at this new plan or this new planning process and looking at the idea that's in the Act around systems, workforce development is a system among systems in a community, how do they start? How do you suggest to a board they start engaging in this discussion?
Sure, it's a great question. I'd sort of like seize the moment, seize the opportunity to for the board to put itself out there as a, you know, not the controller. We are the group in charge of all this as much as the facilitator of the community conversation. So I might, you know, call together a kind of town hall listening session, not unlike what we did, you know, federally at sort of a much larger level. But do that community at a time. You've got a three-county-based area, you've got a, you know, city-based area, whatever that is. You know who those leaders are. Call a few key leaders that are not, you know, that are beyond the board membership, beyond, if you will, the usual suspects, and say, we need your help, we need your support. School superintendent, you know, we really need you in. Community college president, we need you in. Key business leaders, we need you in. Mayor, you know, county board chair, we need you in. What we'd like to do is we'd like to jointly, you know, call a two-hour town hall meeting, and we want to kick that off with saying, we have some great new opportunities. We have sort of the starting point of a vision. We vision this, we vision that, you know, growing our economy, making it a great place for us to live and work together kind of stuff. But we need that rounded out. Let's talk about that and kind of have some exercise around that. You know, here's the kind of business we're about. You know, we want to make sure that we're serving customers, want to make sure we bring our stuff together, our services together. Talk to us about that. We got a few questions we want to pose to you. In other words, you know, create an opportunity. Be seen as the facilitator and the leader, but not the sole owner and controller of a real community dialogue about what do you want, what do we want from this investment opportunity that we have.
And am I correct, Byron, in that part of this conversation could also be explaining how the board, the makeup of the board, may be changing? Because that's due July 1, right?
Yep, absolutely. It becomes effective on July 1, and we're gonna give you a little more detail about effect. There's a lot of things. The most of the act is effective July 1. You know, let's stick to boards for a moment. The board structure, new required structure, is effective on July 1. You know, it's possible that some boards would be fully constituted on July 1. I suspect there's a lot that really can't be for a variety of reasons. But yes, in this dialogue process, you'd start telegraphing this new, you know, maybe not so new, but this the new opportunity for this ongoing, you know, business that we've had in your community for some time also has some opportunities for leadership. This is what those opportunities look like. I would make sure that, you know, the kinds of nominating groups that are supposed to nominate members to your local boards are certainly among the key, you know, invitees and, in fact, sort of like the, you know, the co-promoters and sponsors of your community dialogue, that they're talking broadly about the opportunity to serve on a board and how important it is. Make sure, of course, that your appointing officials, your local elected officials, are on board. Start to, if you will, grease the wheels with them and tell them, we're going to need a nomination process. We're going to need a approval process. How does that work?
Yeah, I was out at the National Association of Counties was meeting earlier in the week here in D.C. I had the opportunity to go out and spend some time with them, and that was one of the points that I was making to them is that they're really critical. Local elected officials are really critical in this process for success because they appoint the local board. And
absolutely,
they really do need to understand the vision of the legislation to give some really good thought as to who would sit on that board, who would be a good person for that board. And likewise, I'm guessing the governor needs to really think about how you're going to set the boards up for success.
Right. So, you know, those may be conversations that happen both, you know, before and after, you know, kind of town hall experience. There are other things that current leadership should be doing. You know, you want to start talking to these new partners about, I think, about service design. Again, there are requirements in the act, but if you step back
and when you talk
about,
Let me interrupt for a second. When you're talking about these new partners, if we want to talk really more formally about partners, this is really reaching out. If you've not had these discussions with the folks who do adult literacy, if you're not all that connected to the SNAP program, I mean, these are really now critical partners, right, that have to be on the same page with you.
Absolutely key partners. And then when you, you know, throughout this whole dialogue, starting with, you know, this kind of the idea of the board change management stuff we talked about through to organizing a public discussion, in the public discussion, following the public discussion, this idea that, yes, what you're really trying to do is take the new required partners plus the optional partners that you just know are available in your community and start to say, what's our vision for our citizens? What's our, you know, vision for our customers, which, you know, largely you could put in the two camps of they are the business and the employers, and they are, you know, the learners, workers who want to get into those kind of jobs. And what would it look like if we just step back and said, what does a customer-centric design look for or look like? What does a service strategy look like that tries to make it as easy as possible for the customer to, if you will, consume the services that each of the partners provide? And those things, I mean, that can sound sort of like blue sky and naive, because also there are lots of requirements around that. But I think first having the vision, first having the agreement that we are all in the customer service business together, helps resolve some of the, you know, the nattier issues that will come along.
Byron, let me ask this question. I mean, we've been talking, to kind of step back to maybe a micro level, we've been talking about the notice of proposed rulemaking, the final rules, the guidance that's going to be coming out over the spring. We've all been talking about things that are coming from D.C. Is there technical assistance? Are there sessions that people can be looking toward their regional office for? I mean, how involved are the regional offices going to be in this, trying to get everybody ready for and really in the mode of implementation?
Absolutely. What surprised you as an RA only about 6 months ago, that I think the regional offices are absolutely critical to the implementation. And, you know, from the time the act was passed, I was involved out in Chicago and continue to be involved here. All my peers out there, the regional administrators, the staff that surround them, they're on working committees and the discussion groups for technical assistance. In fact, they've been a significant driving force in identifying like the key areas in which we know we need to, you know, speak to the system about these strong boards we're talking about, you know, how to do youth services, about how to build sector strategies. So those are examples of teams that include the regional offices and the rollout strategy. Because, you know, even if we did a national gathering, and I'm not forecasting at this point whether we do or do not have one, you know, in the near future, but what we do know we have coming up, you know, in the spring, summer, fall, throughout this implementation process will be more regionally based, more locally based, you know, in-person gatherings and other kinds of discussions, dialogues about technical assistance products, everything from, again, webinars to seminars, in-place discussions, conference calls that will be able to zero in more on state-by-state implementation, and that's where the regional office strength comes in.
Cool, and I will put to rest some of what I have been hearing, Byron. You were not responsible for the delay in opening up the new outfield seats at Wrigley Field, correct? You had nothing when you were in Chicago to do with that?
Nothing directly that I can talk about today, no.
Okay. because, of course, everybody knows that, you know, baseball season's right around the corner. The Phillies open up, I think, the 1st of March, and everybody's in town. It's hard to tell by weather everywhere. I was just talking to Les Range in Atlanta today, and they're closed. I mean, that crazy weather going on everywhere. Byron, we talked about
the feeling sorry for us, but
yes, no, that's true. I have a national board member, Maria Flynn, in Boston, and she assures me that they've had enough snow. We talked about the RAs. You're going to be a part of, kind of hanging out with us the end of March, right?
Right. We have your national conference coming up in March, and I will be there along with, a portion and a number of other people from the department, from ETA. So we look forward to another opportunity for a dialogue.
Yeah, we're going to hear from the secretary on Sunday, and I know we've got a panel of folks coming over on, Monday. And we are going to see some of the RAs through the forum. So I really appreciate that. You know, we've enjoyed working over the years with the department, and we really, in planning this year's forum, have really enjoyed a conversation about what we think is critical. You've been listening to Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards. My guest has been Byron Zeitema. Byron, closing thoughts, anything that we didn't cover that you want to make sure people understand?
Just reinforce, act now, be bold, be innovative, be creative, and yes, we do know that you also want to need guidance for that. It is on its way, and we really look forward to joining your membership in a couple of weeks at the end of March.
Awesome. Byron Zeidema, Deputy Assistant Secretary, U.S. Department of Labor, ETA, thank you very much for having joined us. And my name is Ron Painter. Till I see you again, good luck, good health. Thank you.